We're back on the road with our 8th live taping episode. And leaders, I know this episode is long, but we know y'all love a good legislative preview. It's so meaty and full, and it's just so good. And we know you love it because we saw about 100 of you come out last Thursday to the new Craft and Draft in Irmo, which is where we tape this. And again, we're taping this before the college football national championship game. So we're going to go ahead and say congratulations to Clemson for winning back-to-back titles. Go, Tigers! Wow! Yeah! You did it!
Okay, Gavin, I think we got that one. Let's go ahead just in case. Cover ourselves. Mm-hmm. Let's get one in case they lost.
Good idea, AT. Okay. Right. Let me just warm up. Tigers in the... So sorry to hear about the loss, Clemson. You're still number one in our hearts. And congratulations to the Tigers with the real Death Valley and a real-life tiger.
Meow. let's go to the show.
Let's go to the show. We're not a football podcast.
Bye.
Goodbye. Meow. Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of January 14th, 2020. We don't have the 2020 lined up now. And we're taping live in front of a large, rowdy, not yet surly crowd here at the new Craft and Draft in Irmo. Hey there, Irmo! That's right, we got some craft beer in the burbs, y'all. This week, we are previewing the 2020 legislative session. That's right, your lawmakers return to the State House in Columbia this week. And we're bringing you up to speed on what the hot topics will be this session, such as education funding and reforms. What lawmakers are going to do with an extra $1.8 billion to budget with? The fetal heartbeat abortion bill, the future of Santee Cooper, and oh yeah, it's an election year too. So much to talk about that we brought in Jeffrey Collins with the Associated Press and Avery Wilkes with the state newspaper to give us a sneak peek about what we're going to expect for the next several months, so saddle up. You can interact with us on Twitter or Instagram at @SCLeadPod. We always want to hear from you, so holler at us with your thoughts on social media. It is a war zone out there. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news inside the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, okay, and a chaser of trivia. And make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes, where you can rate and review us. We're also everywhere podcasts exist, including NPR One. And you can listen to all four sections of our podcast while you try not to roll your eyes when your friends tell you that Irmo isn't Columbia. I mean, we passed the Costco exit. We're not in Columbia anymore. I don't know where we are.
It's the same thing.
Hashtag, yeah, that Irmo. Is there a hashtag here? No, not yet. Greenville. Or as you wonder what to get us for our second anniversary. Did you see the birthday cake? I know what I want, some iTunes reviews. So go on iTunes and give us a review.
We will shame you.
And now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present. But here in the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, we're leading off with a boondoggle update. The Post and Courier reports that Dominion Energy, the new owner of SCE&G, has agreed to pay $192.5 million to settle investor lawsuits stemming from the failed $9 billion VC Summer nuclear project. The deal was reached last month after nearly a year of negotiations with shareholders who accused SCANA and its former executives of misleading investors about the health of the nuclear construction effort in the lead-up to the project's abandonment in July 2017. Number two, the Associated Press reports that suspended Chester County Sheriff Alex Underwood, who was already facing federal charges, was indicted on 10 counts of state charges last week that he took money meant to pay overtime for his deputies and had his officers convert his barn into a flashy man cave while they were on the clock, this according to prosecutors. Underwood and his chief deputy also altered travel and expense receipts for a conference they attended with their wives in Reno, Nevada, then inflated their county reimbursement by lying and saying that two other officers joined them on the trip, this according to prosecutors. Number three, speaking of sheriffs acting above the law, former Florence County Sheriff Kenny Boone pled guilty last week at an unscheduled hearing at a Sumter County courthouse to embezzlement and misconduct in office charges, according to the state newspaper. Boone dodged up to 15 years in prison, but will be forced to pay more than $17,000 in restitution to the county general fund, a drug seizure fund, and his campaign fund. And he's also on probation. He is one of 12 sheriffs to face criminal charges in the past decade for breaking the law while in office, this according to the Associated Press. And now for our Florida Man News segment. Every week we give you just a headline, a taste of the most captivating Florida Man news. Speaking of taste, oof, this one. Headline, naked Florida man arrested after biting police dog. It's a very Florida spin on man bites dog headline. And just like Meghan and Harry's Brexit outshining the real Brexit, we buried the lead. That's a proper Brexit, isn't it, Governor? That's a proper Brexit. Just get me out of here.
All right. We need an applause sign. Welcome to your 2020 legislative session primer. There will be a quiz after this discussion. It's not dull, not low energy. It's tremendous. Read the reviews. It's going to be great. But what is the legislative session? Each South Carolinian is represented by one state house representative and one senator. Remember, this is at the state level. This is not in Congress. This is in Columbia. These men and women are in the state house in Columbia every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday each week, January to May. Not everyone knows this, but hey, it's all learning here. That's why we're on the lead. We're keeping you up to speed without talking over you. And they hold committee meetings. They hold floor debates. They hold votes. They compromise on bills that directly affect you. So the more you understand about this process, the more engaged you'll be. And that's important for everyone these days. That being said, each legislative session is 2 years long, and we're about to start the final year of this session, which means bills that are still where they were last year, whether that's stuck in committee or on the calendar, are up for debate, and they can move or they can die. We'll find out over the next few months. So, and then it's also an election year. All 124 House members and all 46 senators are up for re-election this year. That happens every 4 years when all of them are up for re-election at the same time. So there's a lot going on this year that will definitely add some pressure to what's happening in the State House. So now that you know the premise, let's get into the issues such as education reform funding and reforms, the additional $1.8 billion that lawmakers have to spend this year. The future of the state-owned utility... that woke me up. I was getting a little tired of what I was talking about. The future of the state-owned utility, Sandy Cooper. The abortion debate and other potential legislation. To do all this and to get down with the sickness, I have Jeffrey Collins with the Associated Press and Avery Wilkes with the state newspaper. Guys, welcome back to the lead. Happy 2020. We're glad you're here.
It's great to be here. This is very different from the normal lead setup. I really
right?
like it.
It's Monday mornings. We're sitting in the studio, public radio, and it's always a little drab in there.
We need sometimes to had to be reminded that I was scheduled to come in. You know, that still feel
hey,
bad.
Andy
about
Shane
that.
Is. Well, we're not going to get into it now. Jeffrey, good to see you.
Good to see you too. Happy second birthday.
Thank you. We're two, and we're terribly sassy. So we were all at the SE Press Association had a legislative workshop today where we got to hear from lawmakers, some leaders in the House, in the Senate, majority and minority. You know, they kind of tell us what's going on. But one of the big elephants in the room, the $1.8 billion elephant in the room, is the surplus that we're seeing this year. And it's always more money, more problems. But I feel like last year we had a pretty easygoing process. But it sounded like today that there might be a little bit more hiccups going on. There might be some more deals going on. So, Jeffrey, kind of give us an overview about what this money is. What's new money? What's recurring? What that means? And what we might be seeing this money go towards in the budget this year, which is, again, the biggest priority of all the lawmakers in South Carolina is to pass a budget.
I mean, it's a very impressive amount. I mean, it pushes the state budget, the part that lawmakers control and can spend, up to almost $10 billion. And you know, if you think backwards to when the Great Recession started, if we go back about 12, 13 years, the state budget then was just barely over $5 billion. So, you know, South Carolina continues to economically expand by leaps and bounds. The money that's out there, it's not all, it's in two different pots to look at it. One set is $1 billion, and that's in money that is one-time money, like with lawsuit settlements and things like that. That's like a bonus you get from work. It's something you can only spend once. $800 million of it, and this is all estimated by economists, is money that's coming in additional tax revenue because the state continues to grow and fees and things like that. So the one-time money is likely to go to things like roads, fixing buildings, things that you only need to do once. The $800 million will be teacher raises if they want to do it, state employee raises if they want to do it. You know, it's stuff that you have to spend on every year, maybe, you know, that kind of thing.
Avery, what was interesting, what we heard from Representative Goldacop Hunter, who's a huge proponent for state employee pay raises, was that, hey, these guys need it before we see them show up on the State House lawn like we saw teachers and supporters showing up 10,000 strong last year. And it was interesting because, you know, Senate Majority Leader Shea Massey said the same thing when he was talking, Republican in the Senate, saying, we need to give state employees a raise. I mean, directly saying that we need to give them a raise. And I'm wondering, like, is that feasible? Are we going to see, like, more raises coming in this budget? Like, it seems like they have plenty of money to throw at their heart's content, even though there are some things that need to be funded, you know, like these things at the top, like, you know, reserve fund, capital fund, other growths such as entitlement issues.
Yeah, I don't know if it's more money, more problems at the State House, but it's definitely more money, more pressure, because there are more groups out there that want that money and that they know it's up for grabs. And $1.8 billion seems like a lot of money to me personally, but they're, you know, if you added up all of the state agency requests, it dwarfs that. State employees right now are kind of feeling a little left out of the limelight. I know the state newspaper has done a ton of stories. A lot of other outlets have done stories on the fact that state agency employees, you know, across the spectrum are generally underpaid. It's hard to fill positions, especially at agencies like the Department of Social Services, Department of Mental Health. But, you know, they're underpaid. They're overworked in many cases. They have huge caseloads. And teachers are getting a lot of the attention right now. And sure, duly so. You know, 10,000 of them gathered and marched on the State House. They're getting raises. South Carolina lawmakers are spending a lot of political capital on that right now, in part because of the teacher crisis. But Gilda Cobb Hunter did a good job of sort of putting the rest of the state employees onto, you know, onto the spotlight today. And that's something that various associations have been pushing for a while. And that is absolutely something that's going to be top of mind for lawmakers.
And Jeffrey, we were hearing from Shea Massey again, who's the Senate Majority Leader, saying, you know, we don't want to have to spend all this money, but all this money is going to be spent. What does he mean by that? They don't want to build this money in, even though it is, you know, we have, what, $800 million recurring. So that's going to come back next year as forecasted because we're growing as a state. But why are they worried about having that money creating a $10 billion budget, for example?
Well, I believe, you know, Senator Massey, the way he put it is that, you know, we don't need to continue to grow government. He's a conservative and you know, feels that more things can be done in the private sector. And I think there's going to be a group of Republicans in both the House and the Senate that want to do some kind of tax reform or some kind of thing where, you know, essentially South Carolina reduces the amount of revenue it takes in every year. So, you know, it's either by cutting taxes, by shifting taxes around in some way, shape, or form. You know, and Massey and that group of senators, the reason they want tax reform, he called the $50 rebate that, you know, all SC tax filers got, you know, everyone that filed a return got,
a gimmicky thing.
Said it was just, you know, meant for a campaign commercial. So
it cost like $70 million to get that $50 tax rebate,
right?
Around that. So,
right. And then, you know, just the cost of postage.
$700,000, I think.
Yeah, just the cost of postage alone.
The postage, I was talking about overall to give everyone $50 million, $70 million.
And so what they're aiming for is a complete overhaul. And, you know, another thing that Senator Massey said that I think is a good point is that when you have a $1.8 billion to play with, however you want to slice it up, if you're not going to do that kind of tax reform, then you're certainly not going to do it when there's not a lot of revenue where you can shift things around a little bit more. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if I guess what Massey's point would be is if the state government just spends like $800 million or a billion more, they're still spending more money and doing things, but they can also take that extra bit and just kind of make sure next year they don't collect as much money mm-hmm. in taxes.
But we didn't hear any direct examples about where this money might be going, but we have an idea. You know, we might be seeing more money going towards prisons because we know they are just such in a state of
crisis.
Yeah, I mean, crisis is the right word. I don't want to say disrepair, but we're getting there and it is a crisis essentially. And, you know, they asked for what, $40 million last year? They got $10 million. So there's a lot of needs out there. And I think we're going to see those priorities start to emerge, Avery, once we start seeing some House Ways and Means Committee meetings. That's the Budget Writing Committee in the House. the House gets the first crack at the budget after we see what the governor proposes. And it's going to be interesting to see if we do see lawmakers take the lead again from the governor, because we did see a lot of the governor's proposals last year and his budget kind of come to fruition too. And we're already seeing what he's proposing when it comes to expanding, you know, 4K and also giving $3,000 teacher pay raise across the board. So I'm wondering what we can maybe start seeing as some priorities emerge, what you're hearing and what we might start seeing when we start writing this budget.
I think education is going to be one of the main things, trying to reduce classroom sizes, although there was a little bit of debate about that today. But the teacher pay raises you mentioned, I can't foresee a budget without that as a baseline, because you already have, as you mentioned, the governor and the House side of the budget. You know, they're basically announcing this together. Notably, yeah. There were no senators at that press conference.
They had scheduling issues.
Yeah,
that's what they had told us.
So you never really know exactly where the Senate lies on things. They aren't often on this, you know, the same page as the House. That's going to be a priority, I think, at this point. Prisons, because of not only the Lee Correctional Riot, which was the worst instance of prison violence in the country in 25 years, but also the reporting that has come out of that from the Post and Courier. The state have done series on understaffing in prisons, on some of the security issues, not being able to lock cell doors.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be something that is addressed. There's got to be phase two of pension reform. There may be some budget component in that. You know, as Shane Massey said, I think aptly, if you put $1.8 billion out there, people are going to find $1.8 billion worth of things to spend it on. So, Jeffrey, I don't know if you want to add
it. Well, no, I was actually going to mention, you know, you talked about the governor and the House have tended to work in tandem on budget stuff. So the budget that Henry McMaster, his kind of wish list that he presents Monday, that will show his plans, and I think it'll dovetail pretty good with the House. The Senate's a whole different place. I mean, you know, Henry McMaster, you know, proposed the $3,000 across-the-board raise for teachers. The chairman of the Senate Education Committee, Greg Hembree, today mentioned, well, maybe instead of $3,000, maybe we can let districts determine what they want to do. Maybe the district wants to give a bigger raise to a physics teacher or special ed teachers, whatever they see fit. So that's a big difference.
There's going to be a
lot
going on
there. That's going to involve some negotiation there already.
And Avery, just kind of wrapping up on budget here, state did a huge piece. You, Mayon Schechter, John Monk put together great piece about, you know, how money gets spent. And a lot of times, you know, even lawmakers don't know what's in the final budget till they get a check and they're like, oh, we got money for X, Y, and Z. Tell me a little bit about budget transparency, what you've been hearing from lawmakers in light of your series, and what we heard from Shane Massey today, saying, hey, the budget's not going to be done in 3 days in the Senate like old times. It sounds like there's going to be a lot more transparency, a lot more focus on the budget this year.
Yeah, that'll be fascinating. To recap, the state did a story in December where we showed that lawmakers stashed dozens of hidden earmarked projects in the budget, totaling more than $20 million last year. Presumably, that's been happening year over year. It's been a process in which lawmakers sort of request this money for pet projects through the House budget and Senate budget committees. And it's kind of like a favor factory almost. It's one way that these powerful House budget writers get the budget passed is by making sure that votes that they need, that people that they need to pass the budget are on board, and that they all kind of have skin in the game. But it also gets money to projects that lawmakers want finished in their districts, such as revitalizing parks, revitalizing historic sites and museums, money for nonprofits, walking trails, et cetera. Some of that pretty defensible, seemingly worthwhile, and some of it, as we reported, invites questions of favoritism and ethical concerns. And essentially, now lawmakers, Shane Massey, Dick Harpootlian in the Senate, Wes Clymer, and more every day are signing on to this proposal to disclose that type of spending, so it is not bundled up secretly, ambiguously, vaguely in the budget. But there's been some pushback. You know, we heard from State Representatives Gilda Cobb-Hunter and Todd Rutherford today, who noted, you could put all the transparency you want in the budget and lawmakers are still not going to know what they're voting on when the budget comes around, which is honestly true. I mean, lawmakers vote on bills they don't understand almost every day of the legislative session.
I'm having flashbacks to Sine Die last year, the last day of session when lawmakers didn't, I mean, there were so many, we didn't even know what got passed by 5 p.m. Jeffrey, just kind of to transition into education, senators dealt with the education reform bill over the session, over the summer a good bit. It's now on the Senate floor. That means it got passed out of committee It's ready to go on the Senate calendar, get ready for debate. We heard from lawmakers and leaders today saying that's going to be priority number one. We're actually going to start debate on that Tuesday, Wednesday of this week. It might be in special order, which means it has debate priority status. Where are we right now with that education reform bill? And is it going to be another one of those things where it's like there's too much in this bill, we're going to start seeing these piecemeal bills coming over from the House? Or is it going to be a year where we get really close to passing education reform, but hey, not this year, but hey, look, we have some more money, we're going to give you pay raises instead, kind of like what we saw happen last year?
Again, I'll go back to Senate Education Committee Chairman Greg Hembree and what he said when this bill passed out of the committee earlier, I guess in 2019, you know, in December or November. He said, there's something in this bill for everyone to hate, which is very true. And that means that anybody that wants to dismantle it will have an opportunity to do so. On the other side, this isn't the same bill that passed out of the House. A lot of the bigger reform components or overhaul components have been taken out. I mean, I think, you know, there are a couple of senators that mentioned this is more like tuning your engine. It's more like cleaning things up that haven't been cleaned up in 20 or 30 years, that the big changes are going to come later. And it seemed like to me that they're looking at doing these bigger changes, whether it's, you know, expanding vouchers, whether it's, you know, class size reform, whether it's a teacher's bill of rights, in smaller chunks next time. Like, instead of trying to pass one bill where, you know, it's there's everything's just thrown
like
into
school
one
board
bill.
Reform is really going to be the crux school, of this one too, especially, you know, when the state takes over a school district in terms of getting rid of those school
and consolidation. I mean, you know, they've already started that effort. There's going to be a lot of smaller bills, I think, that get thrown out this year, which will be interesting to see.
But it was interesting because we didn't really hear anyone really confirm, like, oh yeah, we're all in on Governor McMaster's $211 million proposal to give a $3,000 pay raise. It sounds like we're going to be touch and go when it comes to education in terms of what they're going to be throwing money at this year for education.
And, you know, last year, a lot of this was driven by teacher organizations, especially SC for Ed, you know, and they came together grassroots and you know, really pushed this issue. And they've set a March 17th deadline. They have certain things that they want to get done. They won't get done by then just because of the nature of the rules and what happens in the session. But I think, you know, they had their big rally last year right at the tail end of the session and right at the tail end of the school year. I think they want to get a little more attention before then. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see. They pulled 10,000 people to the State House last year. That was the biggest rally I've seen at the State House since King Day at the Dome 2000, calling to remove the Confederate flag from atop the dome. I mean, that was an impressive turnout. If they can continue to put that kind of pressure on things, that's the wild card. All the things we heard today are great, but a lot of them didn't necessarily match the agenda that the teacher groups have.
So yeah, the pressure will be there not only within the State House, but outside of the State House when it comes to education this year.
Well, and you know, that all that pressure goes downhill. I mean, if teachers push hard enough, suddenly state employees might get set to the side. They may get mad and start to organize. I mean, you know, there's always something surprising that comes up every session. Last year, I guess you could say it was the Panthers bill. This year, you know,
where's my Panthers
sound effect? I should have given you time to do the
fight. I know. Wow.
Oh, you're on your phone, Kayla. All right.
I'll do this next time. But no, but I mean, you know, there's always a surprise. I wouldn't be surprised if state workers really start to get together, act together after looking at what teachers have done.
Sure. I mean, you see that strength in numbers and what actually happened as a result of that. Avery, I want to switch gears to another big elephant in the room, Santee Cooper. Oof. Everyone's favorite boondoggle situation. Are we on Santee Cooper electricity? No, we're not. So kind of give us a scene setter for this, Avery, because it is, again, kind of a heady topic here that not everyone's like. It's not the sexiest thing in the state, but it's one that's going to be obviously taking some time out of debate in the calendar. It's one of the big boondoggles. Remember, Santee Cooper was partnered with SCANA SC&G for the failed VC Summer nuclear expansion project that failed to the tune of $9 billion, yada, yada. Great times back in 2017. But what's going on right now with the future of Santee Cooper, Avery? I mean, where are we right now, and what's kind of the scene, I guess, and what's the vibe that we've heard from lawmakers at this point?
Yeah, right now we're in limbo. Next week, on the 15th, or sometime between then and March, the Department of Administration is going to release a report. They have been negotiating with companies that have been offering to buy Santee Cooper, offering to take over the management of Santee Cooper, and also, you know, comparing those against Santee Cooper's own offer to stay state-owned, stay state-controlled, and reform itself from the inside. There are going to be three options that are presented to lawmakers. One, the best offer that the Department of Administration got and evaluated to buy the company, the best offer to manage it, and obviously Santee Cooper's offer. That, once that drops, is going to dominate the legislative session. I think this is the Carolina Panthers bill of this year because, you know, once this is on lawmakers' agenda, it's so time sensitive, it's so pressing, it's so huge. I mean, we're talking about a multi-billion dollar utility that it's not going to be something they can just put down or kick down the road, because basically if you don't do it this year, they're just never going to do
like
it.
Like we're hearing, there's that fatigue for this. Yeah. I mean, it's becoming less and less in our minds. We're barely talking about it. But
they racked up $4 billion in debt on a project that was never finished. You know, 70% of that is going to be paid by customers of co-ops. Mm-hmm. So that means that you've got 1.5 million South Carolinians who get their power from co-ops who are in all 46 counties. So it's really a statewide issue. There's no lawmaker who's not affected by this. And they're going to have to try to figure out a way to keep rates low as that debt is paid down, or sell the company or sell the utility to a company that will pay off that debt. But then you lose a state-owned utility, and you know, after, once you've sold it, you've sold it. That's this thing that lawmakers keep saying. I don't think anybody's really, I mean, I think there are a few people who have made up their mind. Tom Davis is going to try to sell Santee Cooper. Larry Grooms, who represents the district that Santee Cooper's headquarters in, he is never going to vote to sell Santee Cooper. But there's a lot of people who haven't made up their minds. There are a lot of hearts and minds to win out there, and it's really going to depend on what the offers say. And then after that, I think it's going to completely dominate the session.
Is that going to happen, do you think, later in the session, or did we see that being, I mean, because again, like filing ends, when we talk about these guys are all for re-election, these men and women, these lawmakers, they have to file by the end of March, and then they'll figure out, do they have a primary challenger? That affects how, I mean, that affects a lot of things in the state house. If they have to be challenged, then they might not have certain votes or certain ways. I mean, we saw this with the gas tax years ago. Do we have any expectation when we might see this debate?
They could get the report as early as January 15th, and they could get it as late as two months after that. I think they'll probably get it on the earlier side. That's all reports so far seem to indicate that they're not going to need until March.
But they get that report, then they have committee meetings. Everyone starts really hashing it out. I mean, it's going to be on the sideline for a little bit, but it's still going to be...
I can't imagine that they make a quick decision. I think it's going to take a long time. It's going to take a while to get everybody on board one way or another.
Santee Cooper is one of those debates that everybody's going to want to say something, and there's going to be a very passionate. I guess it kind of joins abortion and the
segue.
School start date as things that everybody gets all agitated about, and there'll be massive arguments.
When should the schools start back? Yes. We'll find out. You just brought up abortion. Jeffrey, I want to ask you about the fetal heartbeat abortion bill. We heard... This crowd's not for 6 to 8 week abortion ban. We heard from Senator Shane Massey, the majority leader again in the Senate, who just said point blank, we don't have the votes to deal with this. We're not going to deal with this. I mean, not too surprising, but pretty blunt in how he came about handling that situation today.
Previously on the South Carolina legislature, so this fetal heartbeat bill passed the House fairly easily. The one big change that was made is, you know, Representative Nancy Mace got put in there after she told a story about being sexually assaulted, raped, as you know, when she was a teenager. Exceptions for rape and incest. That's the bill that got sent to the Senate. A Senate subcommittee took out the rape and incest, which would probably have killed the bill. I mean, it was done for. I mean, there isn't the support for that conservative of a bill. Then in committee, those exceptions got put back in. So that's where we're at right now. Nothing much has changed. And when Shane Massey says they don't have the votes, they need 2/3 vote. You know, Republicans have the majority. And in fact, but there's a few Republicans, the most, you know, the least conservative of Republicans that aren't willing to get on board. Yeah. And so just as part of the parliamentary procedure and everything, they need 2/3 vote to get on the bill and to assure that, once they're on it, it'll pass, just needs a majority. The governor's ready to sign it.
Yeah.
But what Massey's saying is they just don't have that 2/3 right now. And if you take him at his word, that doesn't mean there won't be an abortion debate this year. There may not be a debate on the fetal heartbeat bill itself, but another annual tradition in South Carolina is the abortion debate as part of the budget bill. They want to cut out all funding for certain agencies and things as a result of the abortion. So there will be an abortion debate in South Carolina. It just may be a little shorter than we expected and maybe in the budget instead of in the regular session.
Again, there's 27 Republicans in the Senate, 19 Democrats also in the Senate. And then we look at the House, there's 80 Republicans, 44 Democrats. I looked that up today because I need a little refresher myself. But to wrap up our discussion here, we've been going a little long, but again, this is a big primer for what we're going to be following this session, and we'll be giving updates throughout the legislative session on the podcast, of course. Avery, I wanted to ask you quickly about guns. I know that was on the legislative agenda today. I don't know if they even brought it up, but maybe, Jeffrey, you can jump in too. We had a lead listener ask me about what's going to go on with this open carry bill, S-139. It actually got recalled from Judiciary like in the last couple days of session last year. It's stuck on the calendar. It's up for second reading. When you talk about second reading, you need to read a bill three times in both houses for it to pass. So it's kind of stuck right there because senators can object to bills. There's an objection on this bill. But I'm just wondering, are we going to see any movement on these other bills like guns, like plastic bags, like, you know, any the plastic bag bans? I mean, I'm just wondering, we talk about these huge topics. Is there room for other things like these other bills?
Guns is one of those issues where it's one of these unique issues where both sides are playing offense and defense, obviously. I don't see there being too much momentum either way. You know, senators, Republican Senator Greg Gregory and Democrat Marlon Kempson have been pushing this bill to expand background checks on guns to close the so-called Charleston loophole that allowed Dylan Roof to purchase the gun that he used in the Charleston massacre. And they have gotten almost no traction on that. And it's something you hear at the end of every legislative year when Senator Marlon Kempson gets up to speak about any issue, is that why are we doing this when we can't even pass gun background check legislation? On the other side, I actually didn't know that bill had gotten recalled. There are some open carry and some constitutional carry bills in the House. Some of those haven't advanced because of who filed them, aka Jonathan Hill, who was ejected from the House Republican caucus. Others, there's sort of a kind of a rift going on within the House Republican caucus on whether to advance bills like that or not. I'd be surprised if a bill like that passed the Senate when you've got folks like Senators Kempson and Malloy. It's sort of been established that Republicans don't have the votes to overcome a Democratic filibuster, and I don't see why someone like Kempson would not filibuster something like that.
Really quick, Jeffrey. Anything?
Well, just a critical component to the open carry thing is the director of our state police, the state law enforcement division, Mark Keel, is against it, and his word carries a lot of weight at the state house. When he says something,
medical marijuana.
You know, medical marijuana is going nowhere right now because, in large part, of Mark Keel.
Wrapping up, any predictions? Anything we should be aware of that we haven't talked about yet? Anything I should keep an eye out for really quick?
I think a very interesting debate will be over college trustee boards and especially the University of South Carolina's board.
There will be
a lot of powerful lawmakers that aren't particularly pleased with the trustees at University of South Carolina. There's a lot of powerful people that back the trustees. So if you want the power broker battle, if you enjoy that kind
some
of thing,
strip intrigue right
that's
there.
Your bill right there, you know?
Ever anything we should be looking out for?
You know, I asked a question about plastic bags and whether that would come up. There's been a movement within the legislature to try to ban cities and counties from banning certain things like plastic bags or doing their own regulations on vaping and tobacco shops and things like that. I kind of assume that will come up. It just seems to come up every year, and that's a nasty, nasty debate. And
love
it's
home
close.
Rule debates, though. You know,
it's complicated, and it's home rule, and I don't know how many South Carolinians even know what that is. But there's also offshore drilling. It's a huge issue in which, you know, you've got upstate Republicans who think, let's just go ahead and test. Let's do some seismic testing and just see what's out there. And you've got low country Republicans and Democrats who say absolutely not, under no circumstances. And then you've got the Trump administration, which it seems all
for.
Yeah, that
moves from proviso into actual law when we talk about onshore infrastructure to support offshore drilling, which we know was, you know, gotten proviso for this past year. Anyway, I'm getting the signal to wrap up. But just want to kind of close out and say you can keep up to date on all the meetings, all the daily news, all the live stream schedules, and more during session by checking out the State House Daybook. That's on scetv.org. I'll be putting that together every day nice and early, so you can check it out, have an idea about what's going on. And you can find all that stuff on scstatehouse.gov. Super great site. We're really fortunate that we have such a great resource for state government in South Carolina. Because you look at some of these other states, I'm like, literally, what is this website?
Mississippi literally agreed to finally start live streaming committee meetings, I mean, which is done all Jesus the time God. In South Carolina. I give the ETV crew and the scstatehouse.gov website a lot of credit.
Legislative services, yeah. And legislative services, yeah. And you can also watch, if you're really inclined, you can watch Gavel to Gavel coverage on SCETV over the air during session. Super fun to do when you can't make it down to the State House. And again, check out scstatehouse.gov and also scetv.org for all the latest things going on at the State House. And also read Jeffrey Collins and Avery Wilkes' news stories as they come out, because there will be plenty going on, even if it's not actually happening. You know, we're going to be doing talk. There's going to be a lot of talk, but we'll see what gets done this year. Jeffrey, Avery, thank you so much for joining me. And here's to the session.
Thanks as always, Gavin.
It's that time again for some campaign trail news updates. We're looking at the latest in 2020 related movements affecting South Carolina, state campaign news, and highlights from the state's congressional delegation. And we got some fresh poll numbers for you to start off. Fox News released a poll showing former Vice President Joe Biden maintaining his lead in South Carolina with 36% support, and a surging Tom Steyer coming in second with 15%. He's followed by Senator Bernie Sanders at 14%, Senator Elizabeth Warren at 10%, and former Mayor Pete Buttigieg at 4%. The survey was of 808 South Carolina Democratic primary voters who were interviewed January 5th through January 8th. The poll has a margin of error of 3.5%. Jamie Harrison, a Columbia Democrat who's looking to unseat Senator Lindsey Graham this year, raised more than $3.5 million in the last 3 months of 2019. His campaign told the state newspaper that he now has $4.6 million on hand. Speaking of fundraising, 1st Congressional District Democrat Joe Cunningham raised $900,000 in the fourth quarter of 2019, outraising his Republican rivals. The big quarter brought his fundraising total to $2.8 million for the year. Former Vice President Joe Biden will be in the state January 19th through the 20th, including the NAACP MLK Day at the Dome. Senator Bernie Sanders will also be back for that event, according to the Free Times. And also check out Chris Traynor's great cover story on the role the event plays on the campaign trail in the Free Times. And a congratulations to Governor Henry McMaster's spokesman, Brian Sims, and Haley Model, an attorney with the House Speaker's Office and formerly with Governor Nikki Haley's office, on their wedding earlier this month. It's always great to see that. Lead, laugh, love.
In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics, or government. The section is named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is here, ladies? Oh, wait a minute.
Sorry.
No, he's not here.
I know. Oh. I am so sorry.
I mean, do you even know how much it costs to get him in studio on Monday? Well, he's not here in Irmo. He wasn't there in Spartanburg, but whatever. Nevertheless,
he doesn't care.
We knew he wouldn't be joining us, so instead we gave the trivia questions to AT, Quizmaster Andrew Shire producer.
Are you guys ready?
I think Jeffrey wants to audition for this part.
The answer is Philadelphia.
Oh.
No.
Whoa. Bold prediction already happened.
No. That's bad juju right now. I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about that.
Oh, flybirds.
Jamie can read the questions over my shoulder. Like
we have a whole hand signal system worked out.
Stealing signs like everyone in the MLB. Okay. Which of the following major state rivers does not flow through or along the immediate boundary of Lexington County? He told me that this one was going to be a divisive question, but if anyone says it's incorrect, they're wrong and he's right.
Sounds like there's going to be,
So which of the following major state rivers does not flow through or along the immediate boundary of Lexington County? A, Congaree. B, Edisto. C, Broad. Or D, Saluda.
Does not flow along.
I does feel like not.
I think we had this issue one time with
that may
the Petey River, perhaps.
He are you ready? You want to go through them?
Yeah, let's go through them again. I'm just having flashbacks.
Which does not run along or through the immediate boundary of Lexington County? A, Congaree River.
Congaree River.
No one cares. B, Edisto River.
Yes. Obviously with the higher part of the PD.
As Caitlin says, the Edisto River.
There's a hyphen in there somewhere.
C, Broad River. D, Saluda.
Is this divisive?
The answer
Okay.
Okay. No. I mean, what do you think? What do you think, coward? I mean, answer.
Edisto.
I think Edisto, but I'm
going to go Saluda, but
I'm not sure. You know, I work out at the Y, and there's a giant map of all the rivers.
Saluda Shoals Park is in Lexington.
And I'm always trying to memorize all the rivers. I mean,
the answer is C, the Broad River.
Wow. See, that is divisive right there. Wow.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on scetv.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Friday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 11:30 a.m. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and southcarolinapublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. And be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. Follow us on Instagram at @scleadpod, where you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle at @scledepod. We have swag, sticker swag that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address, and we'll send one your way. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scled@scetv.org. South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Associated Press and the state newspaper. Our producer and dank meme lord is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on January 10th, 2020. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.
Secret message. Crab apples have no crab in them, and I've eaten a lot of them.
Caitlin, oh my God.